Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So here's the thing about the Lightning's 2-1 win over Carolina in game one of their series with the Hurricanes. This is not going to look anything like the Florida series, it doesn't appear. Carolina is such a tough checking team. These games, I think, Steve, are going to all be low scoring. They kind of were during the regular season. And in this one, Andrei Vasilevskiy, I thought, saved them in a pretty shaky first period. He ends up stopping 37 of 38. And then, of course, you know, when they get the lead 2-1, the defense played terrific the final 6 or 7 minutes. That experience in the Stanley Cup and just that group that they've had together now for a while really came through. But this is going to be one of those, you know, goals at a premium, and you don't want to get in the penalty box.
No, and I think, as Dave Mishkin has pointed out many times, Carolina is a forechecking machine, mm-hmm. and they will forecheck you to death. They're not as sound defensively once you get into their zone, as, say, Florida was. They're also not as physical as Florida is.
No.
But they're fast, and they will forecheck you, and they will pound you and force you to stay in your zone, which in the first period, the Lightning didn't spend a lot of time outside of their zone. And Andrei Vasilevskiy was fantastic and kept that game scoreless. Mm-hmm. The power play is going to be very key in this series, and both teams got a power play goal in game one.
Right.
The Lightning taking too many penalties. Most of them, you know, Cirelli gets the stick up. You're trying to lift the stick. You end up hitting the face. That happens. Sergachev had one that happened to Carolina as well. The too many men on the ice penalty, that's a bad penalty to take.
The one they called on Kucherov, I thought, was a bad call. I mean, if you're going to call that, you should have gotten the Carolina player for doing mm-hmm. exactly the same thing, and Kucherov was more or less retaliating, I think, at that point.
Well, but we know you retaliate, you're more than likely. I mean, what Kucherov did was a penalty, absolutely.
Oh, now, no doubt.
He was interfered with as he was hit before the puck got there on the power play, and he was upset
about it.
There was
no call. Right.
But you can't let that – you can't goat the referees into calling a penalty on you because you're retaliating. I mean, that's –
true.
You know, that's what Kucherov stayed away from in the bubble last year. You know, we saw that in the Columbus series the year before when they got swept out. And we've seen that at other times where he gets upset and then takes dumb penalties because of it. We didn't see that last year in the bubble. He let that slip tonight. Now, they got out of that penalty kill and didn't allow a goal. But you can't put your team on the penalty kill for 2 minutes because you're upset that the officials blew a call. You know, what he did was a penalty. It wasn't just retaliation. I mean, he cross-checked the guy.
No, he did. He made
it real obvious. I mean, you know, it was. Yeah. And you were on a power play. The officials didn't want to give you a 5-on-3. I don't think they missed it. I think they didn't want to give you a 5-on-3, which, to be honest, I can't stand when officials do that, mm-hmm. if that was the case. Maybe they just blew it. But it was obvious that the puck wasn't to Kucherov yet. It was ways away.
Mm-hmm.
And they hit him. So, you know, but you can't retaliate. I mean, we saw that in the against the Florida series. There were times where Florida goaded you into retaliating and you got a penalty. You can't do that in the playoffs. You can't put your team shorthanded for 2 minutes against teams that are as good as Florida and Carolina and always get away with it. Now, the goalie behind you helps, absolutely. But, you know, Kuch has to be better than that.
Yeah, and they score on that. You know, it was only with about 10 seconds or so left in that particular power play. They almost killed it. They were very close to doing that. But the goals, I mean, the first one from Braden Point was a terrific deflection, I guess you would say, or finish after Victor Hedman shot it towards the net. So that put him up 1-0. And then the one that I'm sure they'd like to have back if you're Carolina is this – tough angle shot by Barclay Goodrow, who you wouldn't – if you had Barclay Goodrow scoring the winning goal in game one, you probably could have won some money on that prop bet. But, you know, he hits the back of the net. It seemed as if it was going to be a fairly easy stop on the short side, but it got through.
Well, as Phil Esposito has said many a time, shoot the puck.
Mm-hmm.
Good things can happen when you throw the puck at the net. Now, that's right. A really bad goal by Alex Nedeljkovic. You know, you can't let your pad off the ice like that and kind of pushed back in as the shot's coming in. I mean, it's a really bad goal. And Rod Brind'Amour, the coach of Carolina, said it after the game. He goes, look, it's a bad goal. He goes, it happens. We move on. But and what he said was correct. We got to score more than one to beat the Lightning. So giving up one bad goal, you know,
right.
That can't be why we lose a game. You've got to put more in the net against the Lightning or you're not going to win. You know, I thought Nedeljkovic did great today. That was a bad goal.
Yeah. Well, it turned out to be the winning goal, and that's because the Bulls played such great, solid defense down the stretch. You know, John Cooper decided to go with six defensemen, and then they lost Eric Chernak.
Well, David Savard, first of all, upper body injury, did not play. So Luke Shen drew in as the sixth defenseman. Mm-hmm. And then Eric Chernak, as you just pointed out, with about 2 minutes to go in the second period, got crunched between two Hurricanes players. I'm guessing went into concussion protocol, or at least to the dark room to check it.
Yeah.
The way he kind of fell to the ice is after he got hit, it looked like he kind of not knocked out, but was a little loopy for a second there, or at least.
He never saw that coming. He was completely blindsided. He turned, and I think his head caught the side of the helmet.
Well, the one player hit him, and then that caused his head to hit the other guy's helmet.
Correct.
And you know, it's just a freak play that happens. After the game, John Cooper said that Chernak, you know, he should be okay. And it seemed pretty nonchalant about saying he should be okay. We saw him in the post game as the team was leaving the ice down the tunnel to their locker room. He was there giving high fives to players. He was in his sweats and already changed out of his uniform, but that's good to see him out there in that regard. So,
two guys that I noticed, Steve, and let me get your opinion on this. I think Tyler Johnson's playing a hell of a postseason. This guy has hustled and created opportunities. He didn't get on the board. He didn't have an assist, but he did manage to create some pressure for the Lightning. And then this might have been Victor Hedman's one of his best games too.
He was definitely more aggressive in jumping in the offensive zone today, which we hadn't seen in a while. And at this point, we're pretty sure he's been hurt since March 30th and is, you know, putting off surgery. At least that's all reports. They don't really say anything at this point. So we know there's something not right with him. But, yeah, I thought he played well. I thought he jumped in the zone, the offensive zone, and pushed the pace of play some. Tyler Johnson, particularly game six, I thought was fantastic. I think he's skating very well right now. We talked about this, too, with game six. Putting Ross Colton on that fourth line now.
Right.
Makes that fourth line so much better. And it makes it with Goodrow coming back, it puts Goodrow back on that third line. It moves Ross Colton down to the fourth line. And now you've got everyone where they should be. Not just on your four lines, but even penalty kill. Because your first two over the penalty kill is now Blake Coleman and Barkley Goodrow. And then, you know, Yanni Gourde and et cetera, you know, Killorn and Cirelli and the others that come out. But everyone slots back to where they should be now in their lines, and as far as minutes and everything else. But Ross Colton really helps drive that fourth line, and with Tyler Johnson's speed on that line, and Pat Maroon, we know, has got good hands and likes to hang out in front of that net, it really makes that fourth line effective. Now, they didn't score tonight, but they had a lot of offensive zone time. They were pushing the issue and played very well, and I agree. Tyler Johnson has looked better in these playoffs than he did a lot of the regular season, to be honest.
Yeah, Ross Colton blocked a shot off his ankle or foot area. It looked like that bothered him for a little bit, but he was able to come back and play. So basically, they did what they did to Florida. They reclaimed home ice. They win game one. Of course, a big opportunity, I guess, on what will be Tuesday night when they play Carolina again. That game, I think, is at 7:30.
7:30.
7:30.
Yep.
So they'll be back at it, and obviously, you know, if you go up 2-0, that would be a huge advantage for them. But just to win that first game on the road and turn the home ice back to your advantage is a big deal. You know, John Cooper after the game said that, you know, that this is what an experienced team does, that you got to learn how to play with a lead, how to extend it when you do get it, and then how to protect it. He says it takes a certain mental toughness to do that. And I think In situations where the Lightning are ahead late in the third period or even any time in the third period, I just think they play so smart and so sound.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a point where Carolina really wanted, you know, to get Nedvedkovic off the ice, and they couldn't because Tampa Bay was pushing, keeping it in their zone, and they reduced that man advantage to about a minute and 15 or a little over a minute, whereas it could have been two and a half, and that's a real credit to them, you know, to keep it down in their zone and force their goaltender to stay in the net, because let me tell you, it came down like right to the final seconds. They had some pretty good looks with the man advantage at the end of that game, mm-hmm. and it would not have surprised me if they tied it up.
I think the Lightning are now 32-1 this year when entering the third period with a lead.
That's incredible.
The one loss being in the last round against the Panthers when they were up 5-3 going into the third and then lost in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, the one thing the Lightning do, they can at times play loose in their defensive end and have trouble clearing the pucks in that. When it mm-hmm. comes down to crunch time, generally you'll see them forcing the issue and spending more time in the other team's zone than in their own zone late in the game. And which is a great way to you know, milk the clock in that. If the other team can't even get in your zone, how are they going to score?
Right.
They do that very well. And Colorado or Carolina talked about, I'm watching the Colorado game. Carolina talked about this. You know, I mean, when you have the best goalie in the world behind you, it helps too. You know, it allows you as the Lightning to force the issue and push play and even take some chances at times. Sometimes it may take a little too much, but take some chances because you know the guy behind you can stop it.
Well, think about the last two games he has played, right? A game six that they absolutely needed to win to avoid having to go to Florida for a game seven. He pitches a shutout. And then in the first game at Carolina, he gives up just the one power play goal and, you know, ends up, stopping like 37 shots, I think, or something like that, 37 or 38. So, I mean, he is the best goaltender on the planet, and that's the reason why the Lightning, I think, won a Stanley Cup a year ago and are poised to – you know, to perhaps take control of this series. And if they do, you know, it'll be interesting to see who they wind up with. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves here. This is going to be a long one. I don't see this ending in four or five, but it'll probably go six or seven, I would imagine.
Well, the interesting one is we got a game seven tonight. Toronto against Montreal. And Toronto had a 3-1 lead in this series, and now all of a sudden it's 3-3.
Yeah.
Against Montreal. Ooh, and they've had third period leads the last two games and blew it.
That's got to be killing Toronto, you know, the mecca of the NHL.
Well, and how many collapses have they had in the playoffs recently? Oh, mostly so many. Usually it's to Boston that they're collapsing, but
right.
But now, you know, against Montreal, they're down. Now it's a 3-3 series with game 7 tonight in Toronto.
That'd be such a bitter pill for those fans to have to swallow. So
that would be tough.
I do like the Lightning's chances, and this was an important game. You know, they had a couple days off. You never know how you're going to come out on the road. A great crowd, really excited crowd. I mean, those folks in Carolina were on it from the start with their towels and, you know, very much into it. And it was a close game, so you never really had a chance to relax. But
I think there were 16,299 in attendance. So
yeah,
the Lightning have announced there'll be 13,500 at Amalie Arena. On for Thursday and Saturday's game, of course that's the official attendance. It might be 14,000 or just a little over in the official attendance. But
yeah, I mean they're getting there. You know, sporting mm-hmm. events are starting to look and sound like sporting events again, and I think it's mm-hmm. terrific. Whether it's whether you're watching baseball some nights, and certainly the NHL playoffs have been that way. Golf, you've seen some. You know, obviously a week ago we were watching the PGA. Those crowds were insane. So, you know, it's starting to look and feel. And for as much as, you know, they did the soundtracks and try to simulate crowd noise, at least on TV, sometimes in the stadium, there is an energy you get from humans that you don't mm-hmm. get. The other thing I've noticed, too, look, these guys have a hard job. I think there's a home advantage because I think the people who officiate games, whether that's umpires, referees, NHL – officials as well, that they're influenced by it. You know what I mean? I mean, they're not supposed to be, but listen, when a crowd is getting on you for what looks like a trip or an interference or something like that, you know, and it continues to go on, then, you know, you may be more prone to make a call like that in the home arena than you would be in the away arena. I'm just saying. So that's I just think the crowd and the energy, you know, is something else that they have to battle this year that they didn't have to battle last year. They had a whole separate set of instances they had to deal with being in the bubble, and you got to give them a ton of credit for doing that and coming up with their own motivations and things like that. But we're a little more back to normal with respect to home ice and that sort of thing. What was going on with the ice, by the way? Was that a stall tactic?
There were some, you know, either areas that were melting or some skates stuck in and gashed or whatever. I mean, that happens periodically.
Okay.
You know, the great thing about ice is you can kind of throw some water on it and it freezes again. So
that's how you make it. Okay.
Yeah. Believe it or not.
Just toss a little bit of water on there, and if it's cold, it freezes, and smooth it out with your hand or whatever. It's kind of cool. So we'll see how the Lightning proceed after they win game one in Carolina. The other thing, the big story, because we can have nice things again here in Tampa Bay or Champa Bay. We'll get to just how much of Champa Bay it is these days.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But your Tampa Bay Rays have now won 15 of 16 major league games.
Is that good?
That's unbelievably good. Like I was thinking back to when like I played American Legion ball and we would go on these runs and we'd be like 15-2, be like we're one of the best teams in the state. Yeah, it was American Legion ball. This is the major leagues. These guys have won 15 out of 16. They're 15-1 in their last 16 games. It's just incredible. They sweep the short series with the Philadelphia Phillies. They won Sunday 6-2 at the Trop. And again, you know, they're scoring runs. They're scoring them in bunches. They're scoring them, as they did in this game, with two outs. All of their runs, in fact, in the 6-2 win came with two outs. And then, listen, their pitching has been the story. They're pitching in defense, as it usually is with the Rays. I think they're kind of on a hot streak with respect to all their bats. But that bullpen has been deep. Josh Fleming has been terrific. They had four different relievers come in after him. They're getting home runs. Another one by Mike Zunino, who
all-star.
Lined one out of there.
All-star.
All-star catcher. Yeah, very well could be. No doubt about it.
Who else would you put from this team as an all-star? I mean, he's got to be the first one you name.
I mean, Tyler Glass now is probably going to get the nod as a pitcher, but that's a different story. Yeah, as far as position players go, he would have to be the one. I don't know.
He's the first one. You might get more than one, but he's the first one.
I don't
know
that Randy or Rosarena is, you know, even though he's done some nice things, he's got probably close to their. Look, Joey Wendell to me has been as good as anybody on this team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, defensively, offensively, he's obviously having a great year. I don't know that Joey Wendell makes the All-Star team. I think it's more likely going to be Zunino, and maybe there'll be one other position player and a pitcher or two. But, yeah, Zunino, and if you look at his production, you know, considering really just take the catching position, right, it's been one of the strengths of their offense in some respects. They've had some enormous hits.
Well, yeah, Mejia has been good too, you know,
it's been terrific. Yeah, with grand slams and clutch hits and game-winning RBIs and things like that. So those two guys are off to a great start. Also, happy birthday to the new guy, Brett Phillips. On his 27th birthday, he goes deep.
He says it's the first time since 2012 that he's been able to celebrate his birthday at home. Because signed in baseball and then was drafted by the Astros and went off to play minor league baseball. And this is also the first time he's been in the big leagues on his birthday. But he actually, you know, because he's from here, got to celebrate it, you know, his birthday at home. They were playing at home today.
Seminole High School product, and got a chance to go deep. I only went deep one time, Steve, on my birthday. I was 15, and my parents my mom never missed a game. My dad was often coaching, so he wasn't there. Usually one of my sisters was always there. And for some reason, there was a big game, and my dad was managing in Legion Ball, and I was 15. Playing at Azalea Senior Little League, and I went yard, and it was my first home run of the year, and no one was there to see it. Which is the most depressing thing in the world. It's like, they came home and said, how'd you do? I go, we won. Well, how'd you do? Well, I hit a home run. It's like, no. Yeah, it's like, So you love hitting home runs on your birthday, and you love when you can do it in your hometown. That's just got to be an unbelievable feeling. I mean, just think about Brett Phillips playing for the Rays, playing in his hometown team for the Major League Baseball. It happens, you know, around the game, but there can't be anything greater than to grow up and, you know, watch that team and then end up putting on that uniform and playing for them, you know. So really cool moment for him. He's had some big hits, some clutch hits this year. And so, yeah, but speaking of their pitching, it's given them a chance to get leads on teams. How about this for a number? And they haven't trailed in their last four games. In fact, since last Tuesday, they've led at the conclusion of 30 of their last 37 innings, and they were tied in the other seven. So isn't that amazing that they've
is that good?
Pretty wired up. It's unbelievable. I mean, like, they are who we thought they are. Oh, and by the way, they're beginning a series with your New York Yankees, or Tampa's New York Yankees, or whatever you want to call them, who, by the way, just got swept by the what? Detroit Tigers? The Tigers swept the Yankees?
Yeah, as Aaron Boone said, it was a bad series. Really bad.
You think? Aaron Boone might be looking for a job by the All-Star break if this thing continues to go south for them. Let me just tell you. I mean, I don't know how many more managers there are in baseball that probably are have some owners thumbing pink slips, but he'd be on the top or near the top of the list.
Now, if the Rays go in and take, say, 3 or 4 in this series.
Yeah. Could be it, right? Could be curtains.
I mean, I don't know if they'd go that quick, but that would put them, what, 6.5 games back, I think, at that point?
I mean, they're 4.5 now. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Wow.
That's an impressive lead. It really is for the Rays to be that much up on the Yankees. And they've owned them for the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the thing. The Rays have turned the tables on the Yankees big time, including at Yankee Stadium, where they used to just absolutely struggle. But they have a chance now to, you know, to really extend that lead and start to run away. They already have, what, the best lead, best record in the American League?
Well, they're tied for the best record in baseball with the Padres.
That's incredible to me.
They're 34-20, 14 games above 500.
14 games above 500, and they always say, well, the season begins at Memorial Day. Oh, well, and by the way, we're right at Memorial Day, folks, and yes. I hope you guys are observing it the correct way and remembering all of those that serve and have given the ultimate price for our freedoms and all of that. Make sure you observe those people who do the job that very few are called to do, but they certainly are responsible for our freedoms, and it is a day of remembrance as much as anything. But yeah, here we are, Memorial Day, which is it's sort of a day that you take a look at the standings and you go, okay, I think I can kind of, you know, assess what kind of teams are out there and how they're playing, and, you know, which ones we expect to stay in contention. And, you know, the Rays at the top of baseball. I mean, it's incredible. That organization has just been so successful. And, oh, by the way, did I see where the Durham Bulls have won like 12 out of 13 as well? I think they're on a hot streak.
I haven't looked that up, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, they're also streaking because they have such good ball players at that level too. So, yeah, just really interesting. While we're talking to the Rays, I would encourage everybody that's listening to this podcast, go check out the story that Mark Topkin did on Chris Archer. Really touching story. You know, Chris is battling his way back from an injury, but was out for a little while, maybe longer, away from the team because of his mother passing away. It's a really touching story. You know, she contracted pneumonia. They were hoping it wouldn't be a very long hospital stay. Typically, you can overcome that. But for some reason, her condition worsened, and she passed away, and he was there with her when she did. But it's a really touching story about Chris and his mom and his family and how they're doing. But you're rooting for the guy to come back and get a chance to pitch because, you know, what he wanted to come and play in Tampa Bay for as much as anything was he wanted to be part of the winning culture here. He was part of a lot of teams that didn't win, and now he's a member of the best team in the American League and one that's leading the AL East, and he'd love to be, you know, on the mound and contributing, and hopefully he will before too long. You know, pitching has been such a strength of this ball club that he could only add to it if he can get back and get back healthy. So we wish him a ton of success as well. Backing up to Friday, I happened to do my due diligence. It was reminding me of my Berkeley prep days. But, you know, Bruce Arians had offered Tom Brady and his gang, you know, the guys that put together the impromptu passing camps, an opportunity to go to the Bucs facility and throw. And, you know, I guess it was a week ago today, as a matter of fact, Monday, that Tom Brady and a bunch of his teammates, Rob Gronkowski and Blaine Gabbert and a bunch of guys that were out there, Cameron Brate, a bunch of tight ends and stuff, they're out there throwing the football around, and they did it at the Yankee spring training home, the one that's off of Himes there, just to the south of Raymond James Stadium. So they're like less than a quarter mile away from the Bucs facility, but that's where they decided to hold their first workout, or at least one of their first workouts. We don't know if it's the first. And so we had the OTAs, you know, last week, which will continue tomorrow for the Bucs. And, you know, Bruce Arians reiterated, he said, look, I'm fine with those guys not being at OTAs. In fact, I wouldn't put them on the field if they were here. However, if they're going to have those workouts and Tom's going to throw with those guys, I really wish they would just throw at our facility, because we got three practice fields. They can use them anytime they want to. We won't have coaches out there. They can work out as long as they want. They can have the weight room. They can have lunch, whatever. But just, you know, do it here, because that way it'll protect if someone were to get hurt, their salary would continue to be guaranteed, because the league has been adamant that anyone who gets hurt sort of off campus is going to end up on a non-football injury list, and you're going to lose what would normally be a guaranteed portion of your salary. So I thought it was good judgment by Brady. I saw him out there. I got a chance to watch him for a little while. He still wears the knee brace, obviously. He's coming off of what he said was fairly serious surgery, something that bothered him with that knee pretty much all year. And he moved around pretty well. Not that he's a scrambling quarterback or anything, but he was, you know, he had good bounce in his step. And the portion that I worked watched, they started very early, sometime around 7 or so. And they didn't go that long, but, you know, it was good to see that group out there. And Mike Evans was there for the first time, I understand. He had not been part of that group. And then you also had Antonio Brown and Rob Gronkowski and a lot of the same guys, Blaine Gabbert, that you saw, you know, earlier in the week at the Yankees facility. But, you know, Arian said, he goes, I'm glad that they're out here working out. And he could look out his window and see them. And it was before OTAs. They were off the field. They were done with everything before those guys got on the field. And some of those guys have been doing double duty. Guys like Gio Bernard, you know, they'd gone and thrown with Tom and then also gone to OTAs because they want to be involved in learning the offense and trying to integrate themselves with teammates and things like that. And they don't feel like their positions on the club are as guaranteed as, you know, the 22 starters. So, you know, given Tom's union stance about telling guys to stay strong, and look, he's not coming to OTA, so he's really not going against his word. But I think this is how the offseason could look in the NFL. I think the Bucs may be onto something. And what the teams did was they pretty much said, hey, negotiate with your coaches what kind of offseason you would like to have. And what the Bucs did was they normally would have 10 OTAs. They've shortened that to 6. And they'll be over this week. They'll be done with organized team activities by the end of this week. And then they have a mandatory mini camp, which will begin on June 6th and run through the 9th. Or June 7th and run through the 9th, excuse me. June 7th through 9. And then they're done. And that's it. That's a wrap for the offseason. Now they'll come back later in July and begin, you know, preparing for the preseason. There's 3 preseason games and, you know, and then a week off, and then you start the regular season. But, you know, it's really interesting that, you know, this was sort of the first time that the Bucs agreed to, that those players agreed to show up and just kind of do their own thing at the facility. And I think if teams would just open the facilities, if they would just say, hey, it's here, you can work out here, we can meet any way you want to. We can meet virtually, or we can meet here. It's up to you. But, like, you know, just come to this facility so that you don't put your teammates at risk in terms of their contracts and things like that. And that's what the offseason could be in the NFL. I don't think it has to be as structured, because these guys are going to work out anyway. why would you want them to go to LA Fitness? Why would you want them to go potentially, you know, on some high school field or park somewhere and get their work in? So it just makes sense to me that this should be what the NFL offseason looks like going forward.
It makes sense for everybody. It yeah. makes too much sense.
Exactly.
Which means they probably will screw it up. But
no, absolutely. Well, and you know, it's if there's a check involved, then that's what gets your attention, right? If they would pay these guys more than just the per diems or whatever it is that they get in the off season, which is not their salaries, because that's the thing. Like, this is they're reclaiming their time. This is their time.
Well, but the biggest part of it is
on vacation.
The biggest part of it is getting paid if you get hurt.
Right. Exactly. But they're going to work out anyway, and that's right. The thing. Like, you know, the players don't. They don't feel like it's fair to them. 20 years ago, you know, maybe guys weren't as committed, I guess, as far as being in shape and doing different things. But these days, it's kind of ridiculous. I mean, we know that guys don't get into shape. They just stay in shape. And so, you know, if they're going to be out there working out anyway, what they don't want to be told is you have to be here, whether it's voluntary or not, because we all know what voluntary means. In the NFL, if you let a guy take a rep, he could take your job. And you know, if players come to OTAs or felt like they need to keep their jobs, they're gonna practice and they're gonna practice harder than they should, and it just turns into, you know, one of those where you feel like you have to be there type of deals. And you know, to their point, it's like, look, when guys, you know, in Major League Baseball, you don't have pitchers. And this was Bray's example. You don't have pitchers throwing, you know, full bullpens at 95 miles an hour sometime in November. You know, they build up to that when they get to spring training in February. So, you know, why are you asking guys to run routes at full speed? Why are you asking quarterbacks to throw the ball, you know, down the field? And if they want to do it, and Tom Brady's one of those few quarterbacks that likes to throw all the time, and he really does like to throw in the offseason, but they can do it, you know, the number of throws they're comfortable with, when they want to do it, what throws they want to make without coaches telling them, without scripted practices and things like that, and I think it's fine. So hopefully that's the way it'll be. All right, before we get out of here, congratulations to the USF Bulls baseball team. They beat UCF 8-7 in the final of the American Athletic Conference tournament.
Champa Bay.
Champa Bay is continuing. Red hot Champa Bay. That's right. And they're off to the region. We'll find out during the selection show sometime later today which baseball region they're going to go to. But for a team that is now just one game over 500, thanks to a very good tournament, that's quite an accomplishment. It's been many, many years, I think, since USF has won a conference championship in baseball. So today the Rays will move on to New York. They have the beginning of their series. That game is at 1:05 actually, in the Bronx. We'll talk to Tom Jones probably later this week, my former radio partner, now with the Poynter Institute. Also, the Lightning play game 2 on Tuesday night. And you can always get your mailbag questions in. I'm sure we'll be doing one of those later this week. I'm getting questions on a regular basis, which is really cool, so we're storing those up. But you can do that by sending them to us on Twitter, at SportsDayTB. You can reach me on Twitter, at NFLStroud, or my email address is rstroud@tampabay.com. Remember to remember the troops and those who keep us free on Memorial Day. Have a safe one. For Steve Bursnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.